Columbus Blue Jackets are red hot right now, and of course, in our state capital on Saturday, it was the Ohio State football spring game that took center stage. Here to talk about all of that and then some, Sean Dunnigan at WBNS-TV down in Columbus. Dunny, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. How you guys doing?
So far, so good, and we'll begin with this spring game. It sounds like it had a little bit of everything from new quarterback play to a marriage proposal and much, much more.
Yeah, it had just about everything you could ask for. Beautiful day, mid-60s, sitting out, brilliant cloud in the sky. It was just a beautiful day to be outside, that's for sure.
Just over 61,000 fans took in the spring game, and I know that number might seem a little bit low to our listeners, but they had to cut that number down because of some renovations taking place at the Horseshoe. What exactly is going on down there?
So the entire C&D deck of the north end of the stadium is under construction. There was just no seating there whatsoever, and they're also adding more luxury boxes to the stadium. I believe 8 of them. So the official capacity for Saturday spring game was around 76,000, and they had 61,000 show up. And people might scoff at that 61,000 people showing up for a practice, and you know that's low. Our neighbors to the north in Michigan, I believe, had somewhere around 25 to 30, and their stadium was not under renovation whatsoever. So you compare the two, and 61,000 people to watch a practice, that's still pretty dang good.
I believe I saw a number earlier stating that's the third highest attendance mark for all of the college football spring games, and that's saying a lot for a facility that's undergoing renovations. And I don't know what that speaks to at schools such as Michigan, where they're only getting 20,000. I think the spring game thing was really cool 15 years ago. Maybe it's lost a little bit of its luster over the years, but you know, at its core, it is what it is. It's a practice inter-squad game, so maybe some of that's going away. I'm not quite sure what the reason is. But regardless, there were a lot of things that came away from the game on Saturday. The zone read made a return to the Ohio State offense on Saturday. Some mixed results in there. Thoughts on the effect of it on Saturday?
You have to remember, you're talking about using it with Justin Fields, who is more of a zone read guy. He's more of a zone read quarterback. We talked about that leading up to the spring game, that to expect that. We saw that in scrimmages, that you know, this is what he does. He really likes the zone read. He's very comfortable with the zone read. I thought Matthew Baldwin looked pretty comfortable in the zone read as well. He's obviously not as fast as Justin Fields, but it's still effective. You can't really say anything as far as effective, in my opinion, just because they really weren't tackling. It was a thud practice. So, you know, first thud, you're down. But overall, I thought it was effective for what it could be. It'll be interesting to see how it transforms during the summer, heading into the fall, and then obviously the first game on August 31st.
See, that was my next question. That's got to be awfully difficult to run and realize how good or bad it might be, because you can't tackle the quarterback. So how good or bad the zone read is?
You can't tackle the quarterback, and you weren't supposed to be tackling the running back. You weren't supposed to be tackling anybody. You know, essentially, it was the biggest game. It was 61,000 people there to see a game of two-hand touch.
All right, fair enough. I think that takes a little something away from it. But regardless, you mentioned Justin Fields, and I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what you saw from him on Saturday. Didn't look like he threw the ball very well in that game. And again, you're not talking about a gigantic sample size here, but it didn't seem like he threw particularly well. Well, why was that?
That could be, you know, the receivers he had on the field at that time aren't the ones he hasn't thrown too much in the spring. You know, you got to remember, this is a guy that's been in the system for literally 2 months, 3 months. That, you know, this is his first time running the system live without being tackled. You know, you got to remember, he's a freshman. You know, he comes in with the half a year under his belt. So he's got, you know, half a year of Georgia football under his belt. He's still changing the playbooks. Matthew Baldwin has a full year under his belt as far as just learning the playbook. But he also wasn't playing last year because he was still recovering from his torn ACL. So, you know, you can take all you want from Justin Fields being, you know, 4 of 13 or something like that. for his stats, he still had a 98-yard touchdown pass to Benjamin Victor, an unofficial spring game record for Ohio State for longest pass touchdown, longest touchdown ever in Ohio Stadium for the spring game. But, yeah, it is what it is. You know, Justin Fields, you're going to see a lot more JT Barrett out of him than you will Cardale Jones or Dwayne Haskins out of him.
Sure, makes sense. And I think that's part of the reason why you saw that zone read return to the Ohio State offense on Saturday. And I know Coach Day was not willing to name a starter. I'm not totally blown away by that. I think at the end of the day, it is going to be Justin Fields because, as it has been stated many times before, he didn't transfer to Ohio State from Georgia just to kind of sit on the bench and take it all in. So I think he'll be the guy unless something catastrophic happens over the next few months. But getting away from the quarterback battle here, who were some of the other standouts offensively in your mind?
Offensively, Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson, we have talked about him before. He's one of two freshmen that have enrolled early that lost their black stripe just in spring practice. And just to remind your audience, a black stripe is put on your helmet when you first get into Ohio State. You lose the black stripe when you show in practice that you are ready to be a true Buckeye. And that black stripe is put on the very top of the helmet going across the scarlet and gray stripe that's on top of the helmet. So he lost that. He was one of, I guess, three freshmen, if you want to include Justin Fields in that as well. But Justin Fields and Garrett Wilson both lost theirs. Garrett Wilson just hit an 18-yard touchdown catch where he went up over the defender and just took it right out of his hands. It was a beautiful play right there in front of me. He also made a nice couple other catches. He looked like he belongs and will be playing his freshman year. And then Justin Fields also lost his black stripe on offense. I also like the play of Master Teague. You know, J.K. Dobbins, the starting running back, wasn't in there a whole lot. They only wanted him to be in there for a couple plays. He ran three times and had a catch. But Master Teague ran the ball really well, had a 20-yard touchdown run, I believe. And again, against Thud, where you know, all you got to do is get touched and you're down, that's very, very good. So I was really impressed with Master Teague and how he played on offense.
Again, we're talking with Sean Dunnigan of WBNS-TV in Columbus. He's our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Donnie, let's take a look at the other side of the ball. Who were some of the defensive standouts on Saturday?
Zach Harrison and Noah Potter, the two new defensive ends that came in. Zach Harrison from Olentangy to Liberty and Noah Potter from Medina. Mentor. You know, they both looked extremely good. Zach Harrison lost his black stripe. He was the other true freshman early enrollee to lose their black stripe before the spring game. So he looked like they both looked like they belong. There's no doubt about that. And Jocelyn Wynn had two interceptions, one on Chris Chudinoff, one on Matthew Baldwin, and both of them were Malik Hooker type interceptions where he just comes out of nowhere playing like a center field position. Steps in front of the receiver, picks it off, toe-tapping the sideline. He looked like he had a very good spring during these set of 15 practices.
You think it was tougher for the defenders to stand out since it essentially was a glorified game of two-hand touch? You think that made it easier or tougher on the defenders?
Absolutely tougher because you can't take them to the ground. And you want to show what you can do fully, not just get to the ball and just, you know, letting up and touching an offensive player. You want to be able to take them to the ground, show that you can tackle, so that, you know, that the coaches can trust you getting a guy to the ground. And that's the only way to do it is to take somebody to the ground. So the fact that it was, you know, Thud and you weren't supposed to really tackle, that I think hurt the defense and prevent a lot of guys from standing out.
All right, my friend, we're going to transition from the gridiron to the icebox. As we talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets, my tag team partner Matt Douglas will be in here in just a bit. He was ecstatic over the weekend. You were a busy man over the weekend going from the spring game on Saturday to Nationwide Arena yesterday. Boy, what a run. The CBJ are on right now. What was it like when they scored that first goal inside Nationwide Arena last night?
The first goal was awesome. The last goal, the empty net goal with a minute left, was even better. The fact that you know, they knew at that point the game was put away. Two-goal lead with under a minute. People were crying. Fans were crying because this is the first time Columbus has won three playoff games, have gotten to three playoff wins ever in the franchise's history. The most they've ever won before is two. That was last year and a few years ago against Pittsburgh. You know, they had the President's Cup trophy Tampa Bay Lightning, who tied an NHL record with 62 wins in a season, on the ropes. They still have to win Game 4. And as the Tampa Bay Lightning and Steven Stamkos said earlier today, winning the fourth game is the toughest game to win. Tampa Bay is not going to make it easy. The Blue Jackets need to come out tomorrow and win the first period, win the first 10 minutes, just like they did in Game 3. If they can do that, this team, I think, could sweep the Tampa Bay Lightning, which would be incredible.
What's interesting, though, is, look, if you ask anybody who's a fan of the NHL, if you're down 0-3, what team would you take to come out of that? You'd say the Tampa Bay Lightning.
No doubt about it.
They've got power everywhere. But what I like is it seems after the game, in the post-game stuff, not only Torts, but the players are well aware of just how dangerous this team can be.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about it. They were all saying, they start their chickens before they hatch here with the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're all saying, Game 4 is going to be tough. This is still the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll get Nikita Kucherov back after his one-game suspension. So you got a lot of points there. But Victor Hedman, the star defensive player for the Lightning, he's doubtful for tomorrow night. So he missed Game 3. He could miss Game 4. So that will be interesting to see how the Tampa Bay Lightning come back from that. On the other side of the puck, you have Marcus Nivar for the Blue Jackets. He wasn't at practice today, but Adam Clendenang, who stepped in and played just under 10 minutes, did not look like he didn't belong. He looked like he was out there with a purpose. He looked like he'd been playing for the Jackets this entire season. So the Blue Jackets are clicking on all cylinders, and the Tampa Bay Lightning seem to be just sputtering wherever they can.
Sure. Dubinsky left that game early. Has there been an update on his health? Will he be ready for tomorrow?
Not an update on his health, but he was back at practice.
Now. Okay.
Clearly a good sign, and yes. I think it's just so fun to discuss this because, you look at just how that's kind of transformed things down there. Matt, you and I were talking last week about how, for years there, it was pretty easy to get a Blue Jackets ticket at a pretty cheap price, but now things have changed drastically. Dunny, give us an idea as to how the city has really kind of taken to this run.
And the city likes winners. There's no doubt about that. The city of Columbus likes winners. Just look at how they support the Buckeyes. When the Buckeyes football team, before Urban Meyer, when they were winning, they were all in. When they lost, you start to see some people. That's when you weren't getting 100,000 plus at the stadium. Here, every playoff game is sold out. It is one of the loudest atmospheres in the NHL when this team is going at all cylinders, especially in the NHL playoffs. It is an intimidating place to come and play. Last night you could barely hear the cannon go off when the Blue Jackets scored and when they won the game, which is something to say because that cannon is loud. Just ask some opposing players or some players that played on opposing teams and now play for the Blue Jackets. They hated that cannon. Now they love the thing. They love to hear it go off.
Everybody loves to hear the cannon go off. Come on. Everybody loves it. It's catchy. It's infectious. Everybody can get behind that. All right, Dunny. Always a pleasure, my friend. We appreciate the time. I know you've been extraordinarily busy the last 48 hours, and if the Blue Jackets continue to do their thing, things aren't going to slow down for you anytime soon.
Who needs sleep?
Yeah. You're going to be busy for a while, Dunny.
Yeah, I hope so. Go Jackets. I hope so.
Let's hope. Dunny, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Talk to you guys next week. Yep.